Welcome to Basic Brewing Radio for Thursday, February 23rd, 2012. I'm James Spencer. Here at Basic Brewing Radio, we're all about home brewing. But this week, Chris Colby, editor of Brew Your Own magazine, and I go over the results of the collaborative experiment on Trube in the fermenter. We had an awesome response from our listeners, and we'll share the data with you. If you're new to home brewing and would like to get into the hobby for the first time, check out our website, basicbrewing.com, where you can find archives of our audio and video podcasts and our DVDs to walk you through basic and more advanced brewing techniques. And you can find our 2012 Brewer's Logbooks, which help you track and log up to 50 batches of beer. You can follow me on Twitter. My username is basicbrewing, all one word. Also, you can find me on Facebook at facebook.com/basicbrewing.james. We have a show page on Facebook at facebook.com/basicbrewing. Thanks to everybody clicking on the amazon.com associate link on our basicbrewing.com site. Whenever you think of Amazon, think of us. Click on our associate link first. It won't cost you any extra, and you'll be helping us to bring you this show. We greatly appreciate your support. We have associate links for Brew Your Own magazine and the American Homebrewers Association on our site, too. You can find our Basic Brewing iPhone and Android podcast apps on their respective stores, and the Android app is in the Amazon.com website. We're on the BlackBerry podcast directory now, too, and we're on the Stitcher app as well. We got a ton of data to get through, so I want to hurry up and get into it. But first, I want to check in with Kyle Clark on the Wisconsin homebrew legislation going through the process up there. Kyle says that there has been a bump in the road. He says, while we have experienced some delays in the democratic process, hope is not lost. Senate Bill 395 was given a first reading in the Assembly and referred to the Rules Committee because of the public hearing and initial committee action on Assembly Bill 521, SB 395's companion bill. The Senate bill has skipped the toils and trouble of other committees and gone straight to the Rules Committee for scheduling. Once the bill is in the hands of the Rules Committee, it's only a matter of time before the bill is scheduled for a floor vote. The biggest challenge now, says Kyle, is to get the bill heard on the floor of the Assembly before the end of the legislative session. The legislative session here in Wisconsin ends March 15th. Homebrewers need to keep up the pressure on their legislators, particularly those in the majority party here in Wisconsin, that's the Republicans, because they control the Rules Committee and thus scheduling of bills on the Assembly floor. Kyle says, keep up the good work, everyone. So, Wisconsin brewers, keep contacting your state representatives to let them know you support the legislation to let homebrewers take their beer out of their homes for club meetings and competitions. Keep up the good fight. Now, let's go straight to our results in the collaborative experiment on Trube in the fermenter. Well, Chris Colby, welcome back to Basic Brewing Radio.
Hey, James. Thanks for having me on.
And the experiments this time were to split a batch of beer and to take the Trube out of one or leave the Trube out of one and put the Trube in the other half and then pitch the yeast identically and then see what happens. And then you had a suggestion after that to do a wort stability test, which is basically to try to sanitize or sterilize a small container as well as you can, and then not pitch yeast into a sample of wort that you take from your kettle and see how long it takes to show active signs of fermentation. What were we trying to prove there?
At 80 degrees Fahrenheit, supposedly, if it holds on two whole days, 48 hours, without starting to see visual signs or aromas of bad off flavors, if it can hold on that long at 80 degrees, your wort is supposedly, you know, suitable for beer brewing. And if it can hold on 72 hours, you know, one extra day, then it's actually, you know, very good sanitation. You hope that your wort is clean enough that it's not going to start spontaneously fermenting on its own, you know, in a short amount of time.
Right. And I did mine. It's probably 68 to 70 degrees in this room, and mine took 6 days to show signs of active fermentation. And it doesn't stink.
Hold it up to the microphone.
I have the Erlenmeyer flask right here,
and it smells cidery. It doesn't stink. It just kind of smells cidery.
That sounds like acetobacter.
Okay. I haven't tasted it.
A little bit. a little bit of vinegar.
Yeah, I don't know. Of course,
maybe.
Of course, I left the sample. It's covered with foil, but I left the sample, you know, on the counter next to my kombucha jar. So I don't know if that's. But 6 days, not bad. I got a question from Josh F., who says, I did the wort stability test after hearing about it on your show and had no activity for 2 or 3 days, which was acceptable but could still be improved. I accidentally forgot about it under the counter for 2 weeks. I opened it today to clean out the jar, and it smelled terrible. The thought of the bacteria or yeast that made that smell being in my beer is bothering me, especially with all the extra beer sitting at room temperature in my closet. What is the impact of this small amount of contamination in my bottles? So we scared poor Josh. We had him do the wort stability test, and now he thinks all his beers are full of nasty stuff. Should he be scared?
He's scared straight.
Scared sober. So should he be worried that this unpitched sample turned nasty? Is all the rest of his beer going to turn nasty?
Well, the thing is, all unpitched samples are eventually going to turn that way. No matter how clean you are, no matter whether you're a home brewer or a commercial brewer, your beer is going to have some level of contamination in it. There's going to be some level of bacteria. There's going to be some level of wild yeast. It's just a question of how much. Just detecting, you know, the fact that your wort stability test wort is eventually going to turn bad does not mean that your beer is going to turn bad. And there's a couple reasons for that. One is simply, the degree of contamination. You know, the longer it takes your wort stability test to show some sort of sign of fermentation, you know, that means the less level of contamination you had initially. Also, a second thing you have to keep in mind is that, you know, you've got your wort initially and it'll have whatever level of contamination it has, but when you pitch the brewer's yeast into that, you pitch an amount that, unless you've done it very, very wrong, you pitch an amount of yeast that greatly exceeds, you know, just astoundingly exceeds the amount of contamination in your wort. And this, the brewer's yeast quickly starts fermenting. It quickly starts making alcohol, which inhibits or kills most bacteria and wild yeast. And it also drops the pH, which has the same effect. So unless your beer is strongly contaminated with, a type of bacteria or yeast that can deal with, you know, sort of beer pH and beer alcohol levels, which are, you know, those are the sort of famous ones that we as brewers know because the rest of them get sorted out. But unless your beer is strongly contaminated with one of those, the presence of an off flavor in a wort stability test is not going to be a problem unless it started fermenting like right away, like the next day or within, you know, before 48 hours.
Yeah, I mean, if it takes 2 or 3 days for you to start seeing signs of fermentation, you would have had to start with a tiny amount of active bugs in the very beginning, right?
Yeah, and that's at 80 degrees, though. At the lower it goes, the longer it's going to take the stuff to take off, and I don't know exactly what the if you can't even have an equivalent, but yeah. If it hangs out, supposedly, you know, the sort of what all brewing textbooks say is if your wort stability test is clean at 48 hours, you know, there's no visual signs of fermentation, it doesn't smell off, you know, it smells like fresh wort, then you're good.
Okay. We got another one from Chris Merold, who says, attached to my results for the wort stability test, I failed my test because, in my opinion, I added 1 pound of honey 5 minutes after flame out. While nothing bad can grow in honey, I've been told that yeast and bacteria can still be in there, but in an inactive state. He says, below is what I posted on the Northern Brewer Forum regarding this. And we've got a ton of email to go through, so I'm just going to summarize these things. He said about 5 minutes into wort chilling via the immersion chiller, he added his honey, and the temperature was already knocked down quite a bit because the water's cold up there. He decided to do the wort stability test. The testing jar started showing signs of fermentation after about 24 hours and had quite an unpleasant odor after 48 hours, a meaty type smell. What was coming out of the fermenter via the blow-off tubing was a very nice honey smell, so I thought I might be okay because of the blow-off smell, and I pitched a healthy starter. Went to sample it tonight after 3 weeks in the primary, and what came out was not a real fresh beer smell. It wasn't an obnoxious smell, but not the freshest. Tasted it, and it had the same impression. Then got hit with quite a sour aftertaste. Based on the wort stability test failing and the sourness, I decided to dump the batch, as I didn't want to get my kegerator mixed up with this stuff. He says he repeated the test with another batch a couple of weeks ago and did not change anything in the process except covering up the boil pot with a lid as best as I could during immersion cooling. After 7 days at 80 degrees Fahrenheit, no activity was seen in the testing jar. He's blaming the honey, adding the honey after he started chilling. He said the smell in the testing jar was really unpleasant, a mix of cooked corn and meat. I eventually threw out the testing jar after 4 days as my fiancé kept going down to my fermentation chamber to look at it and commenting how this is what we drink. Probably wasn't a good idea to give her a smell of it, Chris says. So what do you think? Could honey infect your beer?
I think he's probably onto something there. I mean, usually people add honey either sort of near knockout, you know, when we're still... you know, some heat left in the kettle, or sort of sometimes, you know, some people do add it in secondary when you've got, you know, added to a lower pH, high alcohol, it's relatively high alcohol environment where, you know, a secondary fermentation will restart. But he added it during cooling, which is a little weird, or not weird, but a little unconventional.
Well, he forgot.
Okay, I get it. And then, yeah, so, I mean, I think his assessment is probably right. I mean, honey does suppress microbial growth, but there's still, you know, can be organisms that are just trapped in it that while they're in the honey aren't going to be active. But once you dilute them, you know, into a environment with more water and or the honey's more dilute and the... you know, the compounds that the honey produces to suppress bacterial growth are more dilute, I think it could take off. I mean, I think that sounds... I think his assessment of what happened is probably right, yeah.
Darnell Bronner reports that he tried the wort integrity test and got 4 days till signs of fermentation. So he sounds like he's in good shape. Christopher Owen, who's been on the show as well, said he did a wort stability test. I have attached a pic of my 12-day-old wort sitting at room temperature. After thinking about your results, I said that mine took 6 days. After thinking about your results, I wonder if mine is still clean because of the recipe. This is a ruination clone with 100-plus IBUs. So you think tons of alpha acid might help inhibit the activity in the wort stability test?
Hops do have antibacterial characteristics, so that's certainly possible.
Let's talk about the Trub experiment. I appreciate everybody who took part. It's I got flooded with entries this past weekend. Tony Perkins writes in. He says, "I was interested to see if the experiment would take into account the possible effects of kettle Trub on beer staling. That's a problem that haunts me more so than the taste of my own beer when it's fresh. It could be good if your experiment could test this, but that could require having data submitted long after the first bottles are tasted. So that's something to take into account. If you've done the experiment and you still have some of the bottles, keep them, you know, for a few months and report back if you taste them again and let us know what you found out. I think that would be an interesting layer to add to this experiment."
Yeah, you could also stick them in, well, it's not quite warm weather season, but you could also stick them in your attic or somewhere where it's really hot and sort of force age your beer.
That's true.
You know, but yeah, that is a good question because you would expect that some of the material in Trub is, you know, exactly the sort of thing that you would expect might contribute to staling, you know, in the long term.
Naveem Natal from India wrote in, and he says, basically, to summarize, he was having problems with astringency in his beers, and he discovered that by doing Whirlpool and using isinglass to remove Trub from his beer that it greatly improved his beers. So he said simple removal of hot tube via whirlpool and ensured near complete removal of all astringent compounds. I've had no issues with cold tube, and it took me 6 years to learn this, he says. So so he blamed tube for astringency in his beers. So that's one vote for tube removal, or at least not including the tube in the beer.
Yeah, if your tube contains hop debris, yeah, there's certainly going to be tannins in that. So that's reasonable, that especially for hoppy beers, getting it off the tube could reduce astringency. I would buy that.
Now, we've got 19 different brewers sent in data on 20 beers. See what you think about this data. I did a summary. I broke it down into fermentation performance, how the beers were visually, how they were aromatically, and how they tasted. And of those that reported either positive results or a preference on one side or the other, I tallied those up. Visually, four of those who reported a preference said that they liked the Trub beer better. Three liked the one that didn't have the Trub. So no Trub 4, no Trub 3. On the aroma, 3 liked the Trub beer, 5 liked the clear beer. And on taste, 7 liked the Trub, and 6 liked the clear. So it's almost straight down the middle of those reporting a preference one way or the other between the two. Of those sensory evaluations, it's almost split halfway, you know, down the line. Although there's something else on the fermentation performance. Those that said that either the fermentation was more active or more complete or seemed to be more healthy, 10 said that the beers with the Trub were better, and only 3 said those without the Trub performed better in the fermenter as far as fermentation performance. So there's a result, I would think, wouldn't you think?
That one, I think, helps make sense a little bit of the results. In the case, if Trub, we said ahead of time, and you know, there's reasons to believe that some Trub in your fermenter is going to help your fermentation. So if you saw evidence that Trub was actually helping your fermentation, you could say that, well, maybe your wort is either under aerated or that you under pitched, or there's something in it that having the Trub actually helped. And in those cases, when they saw a visual difference or some sort of difference in the fermentation activity, they preferred the Trub plus beer. Whereas in the cases where they didn't recognize a difference in fermentation activity, then it was it more the in those cases it was they liked the Trub minus beer. Is that correct?
I'm not sure. I don't know if I need to go back and coordinate those two to be sure.
I think that was right from my looking through the data.
Okay.
But yeah, so if that's right and it's at least reasonable, that would mean that if you, for brewers that are habitually underpitching, like people who don't make starters, carrying over some Trub might actually help their beer out. Whereas if you, if you pitch an adequate rate, if you've got enough yeast nutrition, if you aerate thoroughly, then maybe carrying over the Trub actually is a little bit of a detriment.
I did the experiment with a pale ale, lots of hops as usual, and I was startled by the difference between the two halves. I mean, I sent you the beers, and you're sipping on them now. The the one with the Trub was remarkably more clear than the one without the Trub. I mean, that's counterintuitive to me. That, you know, you would think that if you put a bunch of junk in your fermenter and your wort, that it would be more cloudy at the end. But the one with the Trub fell out. It got finished fermenting sooner than the one without the tube, and it fell clearer, much more completely and sooner than the one without the tube. And it was such a startling difference that I decided to do it again, just to make sure that I was going down the right road. And I've got the same results. I haven't bottled the second round yet, but in looking at the fermenter, the beers look the same as the first round. So I thought that that was startling, the difference between those two. And I, by the way, I forgot to use Irish Moss. So so I'm kind of happy that I did, because maybe Irish Moss would have even the playing field a bit. I don't know. So
yeah, that's interesting. I mean, it could be. I mean, from your results, one possibility is that something in Trub acts a little bit like a fining agent. Mm-hmm. That when it's kicked up and around during fermentation, it latches onto, you know, well, proteins are the main cause of like chill haze, and it could be that, you know, some of the tannins or the or, you know, really anything, you know, there's a lot of different compounds we would expect in Trub. You know, maybe that's latching onto things during fermentation and dropping them out of solution. It's also possible it's just making the yeast more healthy, and maybe they're able to take in more stuff.
Mm.
You know, either one from the results we've got is a reasonable conclusion, but we don't. I mean, it would take a lot more a lot more study to figure out what is that one. But I mean, I think the possibility that it acts as a somewhat as a fining agent in the fermenter is a possibility.
So what was your opinion of the beers? I mean, which one did you like better and why?
I liked the Trub Plus one, the one with the Trub. I thought, well, I mean, first visually it was a lot better. It was clear. It had a nice head on it. Whereas the one with the clear wort was cloudy and had a very weak head on it. And I just thought the differences were, some of them were more just personal preferences. I thought the one without the Trub, the one maybe with clear wort, smelled a little bit more fruity and a little bit more, there was a slight worty character to it that I thought wasn't really appealing. Whereas I thought the Trub Plus one just seemed more clean, which again is sort of counterintuitive when, you know, it had more gunk in it to start with. But yeah, I also thought the Trub Plus, though, did have a sort of a harsher hop bitterness to it. The Trub Minus one was a little more, the hops were gentler. And I don't know if the harshness in the hops is it's more bitterness, because like the Trub would have contained hop debris. And just, you know, maybe just being an alcohol extracted a little bit more alpha acids from it. Or it could be, you know, bitterness and astringency are kind of easily confused, especially when they're both present. So maybe the Trub added a touch of astringency, which sort of just makes the bitterness seem a little harsher, or you know, a combination of the two.
Yeah, I'm sipping them now. And last night I couldn't tell a lot of difference because I was drinking them right out of the really cold fridge. But last night my wife said that the one without the Trub was more kind of grapefruity. And I can see that today. I'm letting them warm up. I can see where the one with the Trub showcases the bitterness a bit more, but the one without the Trub is kind of more, and I think you said earlier, fruity, and maybe showcases the flavor of the hops better than the bitterness. They're both tasty, and the differences aren't staggering, but, you know, I think that I think I'll go with you and say that I like the one with the Trub better, which is interesting.
That's one kind of interesting thing, and it sort of falls in line with a lot of the experiments we've done that have shown that even when differences are present, a lot of times in brewing, taking one path or the other, it's not necessarily that the beer is completely ruined either way. It's just there's a difference that's detectable.
Right. I guess if the question was, will loading your fermenter up with Trub ruin your beer? If that's the question, then the answer is no. Because nobody, right. nobody in the feedback said, you know, I'll, you know, do whatever I can to keep the tube out of my beer because the one with the tube is just as nasty as it could be, and you know, I had to throw it away. Nobody said anything like that. It was mainly preference, sometimes stronger preference than others. Jeff Karpinski out in Elizabeth, Colorado, sent me samples of his Black IPA. And that's definitely going above and beyond. I'm not requiring everybody to send me beer for the to participate in the experiment, although I wouldn't turn it away. No. I, he said that the start and length of fermentation was identical. The final gravity was also identical. Visually, however, the differences were striking. The clean wortkreuzen was light and creamy. The true wortkreuzen was very, very dark. The wife called it gross. And yeah, I did see there is a difference. I took some photos. The there was definitely a visual difference, you know, in the fermentation. Finished beers appear identical in color, clarity, and head. The clean beer had a fresher, maltier smell. The true beer smelled slightly earthy. Differences, while small, were detectable in a triangle test. He said the triangle test wasn't even remotely a challenge. He picked the clean beer correctly. After one sip, the clean beer tastes fresher. The malt flavors are more pronounced, and the cascade flavors, bright and crisp. The true beer had significant tannins, resulting in a real harshness on the tongue. There was also a distinct ashy aftertaste to the beer. Conclusions, he said, the true, at least in a highly hopped beer, has a significant impact on beer flavor. As the vast majority of the beers I brew are hop-heavy, this would definitely explain the tannin feedback I've received repeatedly during competitions. I will definitely be giving my beers a longer post-chill rest prior to racking to the fermenter. And he said he'd... his wort stability test went 6 days with no sign of fermentation. Now, it's interesting because he sent me the beers, and I tried them last night out of a different, warmer fridge, and I had kind of the opposite impression. I thought that the beer with the trube had a longer-lasting foam. It was crisper, a better hop aroma and more bitterness. I got, like, piney aroma and grapefruit flavors, and to me, the clean side was more malty, more rounded, more cloudy. So it's interesting. I wonder if a little bit of aging in the bottle had something to do with that. It'll be interesting to see. He said that he had handed out more samples to other folks, and it'd be interesting to see if they have the same impressions. So I appreciate Jeff sending that beer. It was tasty, by the way. Both of them were good.
It could also just come down to personal preference. Like in the two beers I'm trying of yours right now, I mean, I prefer the Trube Plus one, but I certainly could see as someone just with a different, you know, different preference for what they like in beer, liking the other one.
Yeah.
And so that kind of raises the idea that it might not be that having some Trube carry over versus none is a question that can be answered like all or nothing. It's a question that maybe partially, like, what do you like?
Yeah.
And if you're a home brewer who, say, let's say you've routinely carried over quite a bit of true because you don't want to, you know, lose that volume or whatever, you might, you know, just one time try collecting just clear wort and trying it and seeing if you like that. Also, if you're the reverse, if you're someone who's always, you know, sacrificed that last little bit of wort to get only clear wort in your... fermenter, you might try racking over just a little bit of trube the next time, you know, and seeing if you like that. And, you know, that's doubly true on a beer. You've brewed more than once, so you have sort of some idea of how it turned out before.
Yeah. Or do a split batch like this.
Or do a split batch, yeah. There's the most direct way of doing it.
David Perry from Gray, Georgia, did an American Pale Ale. The with carboy seemed to have a more vigorous fermentation and bubbled more frequently than the without. The with trube also seemed to slow down and finish around a half a day to a day faster than the without, but maybe could have been more sediment and stuff to move around with the with trube to look like it was fermenting more vigorously. He said the keg that was without the trube seemed a bit more carbonated for some reason, which could be affecting head retention. Head retention seems better in the glass without the trube, all the way down till empty. I said in the aroma, I can barely pick up a slightly sweeter and more caramel aroma in the without trub and slightly more hop aroma in the with trub. This is really digging deep to try to find a difference, and even had some friends try and notice differences. I'm surprised at how close and similar these ended up being. As with the aroma, the taste of both is very similar. There's a slight difference between the two. The with trub, a touch more hop flavor and bitterness, and without, just barely sweeter with more caramel tasting. He says, I hope that my data will confirm the opinions of the majority of participants and not be the crazy oddball that just gets tossed or goes against what seems to be the norm. Says they're
well,
both,
you're in luck.
Yeah.
there was no norm.
They're both very similar and hard-pressed to find the differences. Another surprising conclusion is that I even seem to prefer the one with the trub, which is not what I would have thought. Which is always fun in science when you come up with something that you didn't expect. Brian Davis from Lyle, Minnesota, did a Kolsch. He says the fermentation's kicked off pretty much the same time, but the Trub Plus one had a much larger Kroisen and more vigorous fermentation. Took a week longer for the Kroisen to fall in the Trub Plus. Very similar in the visual characteristics. Huge difference in the aroma. The Trub Plus has a sulfury smell that you might expect from a beer that isn't quite done fermenting. The Trub Minus has a nice, mild, malty aroma that you would expect from a Kolsch. The taste pretty much follows the aroma. The Trub Minus is crisp and clean. The Trub Plus is kind of muddled, kind of like the difference between a light lager and a blonde ale. I'll drink them both, but I may just enter the Trub Minus in a competition somewhere. It says, I need to reserve final judgment for a couple weeks while these lager a little more, but it does seem to make a significant difference. Now to test if a little Trub makes a difference. He says he didn't do the stability test on that batch, but he's done on the four batches following this. Two were solid. Only one made it about 3 days, although the beer seems fine, and the fourth is awaiting results. So that's interesting. The Kolsch, not so much. Different yeasts may react to the Trub in different ways. Adam Ross from Davenport, Iowa, did a Bavarian Hefeweizen. He said the dirty half started fermentation later but finished sooner. During the peak of fermentation, they look like two completely different beers. The dirty half flocked out much better than the clean half. I had my wife administer a blind triangle test for me, and I couldn't tell the difference visually. About a week later, I brought unlabeled samples to my homebrew club, Mugs, meeting. I left slips of paper out with two questions for members to answer anonymously. Which had the Trub removed? And number two, which do you prefer? The comments I did get on appearance was balanced enough. I couldn't draw a conclusion. So I'd say that confirms that there was no visual difference. He says, there's massive differences in the aroma. The aroma is what enabled me to tell the difference in the blind taste test. The dirty half had a lot of clove, while the clean half had a lot of banana. Picking out the different beer and knowing which was easy for me. Here's my train of thought. Hefes are all about the yeast. If you underpitch, you stress them out and produce banana characters. If you overpitch, you produce clove characters. Although I gave each beer equal yeast, one had more nutrients, in other words, Trub, than the other. During fermentation, the difference was very noticeable, too. The clean half gave off a much stronger aroma, while the dirty half was muffled. Tasting results, mouthfeel, bitterness, and carbonation seem the same. The clean sample did taste a little cleaner, but that could have been my imagination. The taste test at my homebrew meeting was more interesting. 13 people thought the dirty sample had the Trub removed and were wrong. 5 thought the clean sample had the Trub removed and were right, and 5 couldn't tell the difference. In terms of preference, 7 preferred the dirty sample, 14 preferred the clean, and 2 couldn't tell the difference or had no opinion. So he says, it's hard to tell with the beer I chose since Hefes are so much based on fermentation activity. I'm curious to see what other experimenters discover with other styles. I used to dump pretty much all the Trub into the fermenter. I'm going to back off on that a little bit now, but I'll still leave some to help fermentation along. I can't wait to hear from the others.
One of his results, he said the beer seemed to flock out harder on the Trub Plus side. That kind of lends some credence to the idea that maybe some of the compounds in Trub are acting as a fighting agent in the fermenter.
I agree. Jason Young from Phoenix, Arizona, did a Hefeweizen as well. He said, no noticeable difference in fermentation, no notable difference in beer appearance. He said the batch with Trub had a more pronounced banana clove aroma. Now, Adam split up the banana and the clove, saying that the clove went with the trube and the banana was without the trube. Jason says that the batch with trube had a more pronounced banana clove aroma. The batch with the trube is slightly more flavorful. Perhaps the trube provides a little more nutrition for the yeast to build a more pronounced flavor and aroma profile. Interesting. So he got varying results with the Hefeweizen and the yeast as well. Sean Terrell from the Silverton Brewing Company in Silverton, Colorado. You've heard Sean on this show before. He did a Belgian blonde. He says the beers appeared to start fermenting at the same time, but the batch with the trube reached a final gravity a day earlier, day four, than the clean fermenter. This could be due to difference in pitching rates, though. Final gravities were essentially identical. He's showing off his equipment. 1.0055 for the batch with the trube, 1.0045 for the clean batch. He says clarity in the batch with the trube is slightly better, although this could be due to it reaching final gravity sooner. Color and head retention appear identical. And he sent a photo. He says the clean batch seems to have a slightly more of a candy bubblegum aroma, while the batch with the trube having more pepper, maybe due to the hops. The difference is extremely small, definitely within what I would consider a normal batch-to-batch variation. The clean batch has a little more malty character, with the batch with trube being drier. Again, this is a very small difference. He said the trube sample did exhibit better clarity. Again, any other differences between the batches are so small that I'm having to convince myself that they exist, and I would have no trouble believing that they're due to factors other than the trube. And he said he did the wort stability test. He said both samples exhibited no contamination after 9 days at 18 to 22 C. But again, the Hefeweizen and the Belgian yeasts are going to be more influenced probably by differences in the fermenter as far as the flavors that they throw off, rather than, you know, if you're just using the US05 on a hoppy beer. Nir Orlev from Israel, his style of beer was, he said, improvisation, nothing specific. He says in the fermentation process, there was actually quite a difference. The fermentation started out a lot faster in the trube carboy. It was more intense, ended earlier, and produced a relatively shallow Kroisen, 2 inches, compared to the slow and relaxed fermentation in the clear carboy, which did create a taller 4 to 5 inches of Kroisen and required replacing the airlock with tubing. On hydrometer readings, the trube beer was always ahead, showing less gravity points in any measurement. He said both beers had the same color. The trube beer was better carbonated and possibly due to that had a nice head volume and retention, but the difference was not very significant. The aroma of the clear beer was more dominant. It did not have fruity, hoppy aromas, but felt more malty and alcoholic. On tasting, he said both have not aged enough, but the clear beer was better balanced, although less carbonated. More gentle tastes, some hint of coffee, lower bitterness than expected, but a nice body. The trube beer was stormy, he said. Too many unbalanced, complex tastes, possibly due to slightly lower gravity, higher carbonation, and much higher bitterness. No coffee flavors could be recognized. Heavy body, which needs much more time to balance. He says, it's strange. The missing trube affected fermentation, which started out a lot more slowly and developed more gently. Therefore, the resulting beer was better balanced with less off flavors, but it also did not ferment thoroughly, and it lacked bitterness comparing to the other beer. He says his conclusions would be trube is good for the yeast and it helps them kick in faster and convert better, but it also causes more aggressive fermentation and off flavors that need time to balance. Some bitterness is achieved through exposure to the trube during fermentation. Does that make any sense? The difference in bitterness was very noticeable. Well, sure, it makes sense. He says his wort stability test was clean during the first 48 hours. So it's interesting. He was saying that his beer without the trube tasted better because fermentation was slower.
Yeah, that's usually backwards from how we think of it. Unless the fermentation's like uncontrolled, generally a faster paced fermentation is better.
Michael Tangen from New Brighton, Minnesota, and Pike Lake Homebrew. Did a celebration ale clone recipe. He said to start, the fermentation was noticeably different in character. The one without the troub seemed to get off to a healthier start with a great deal of activity within 12 hours of pitching the liquid yeast, though both did have a healthy fermentation with plenty of croissant to show for the end. So that's opposite from what we found so far. After the initial active fermentation was through, they both had relatively good clarity when the yeast fell and the churned-up troub had settled. It was also immediately apparent just how much wasted space there was by bringing the troub along for the ride. He said the batch that fermented without all the troub had a much more balanced flavor to it, a nice malt base and a more pronounced and clear hop aroma and flavor. The beer that fermented with the troub tasted bland, like most homebrewers' first few homebrews. It tastes all right and is drinkable, but it doesn't have the quality and character of craft beer. He says, it's painfully obvious, at least to me, that there is an obvious benefit to leaving as much of the troub behind as possible from the kettle when pouring or siphoning into the fermentation chamber. Ryan Vincente from Yakima, Washington, did a stout. Now, he didn't get equal volume in each carboy. He said the junk beer ended up with about two-thirds of the no-junk beer. However, he divided his dry yeast equally still. He says, as a result, the junk beer seemed to be more vigorous. So he actually accidentally added a second variable in there.
Yeah, with unequal pitching rates, that makes it a little bit harder to...
Yeah. Because
that's going to have a
he says
good that, reason.
Yeah. He said the no-junk beer was a smoother product and was received better than the junk beer. Extra tannins may have leached into the junk beer, and perhaps extra alpha acids were released into the junk beer when the hops were forced through the funnel during transfer. Mike Dupong and Tracy Emery of Twin Falls, Idaho, brewed 11 gallons of a light cream ale for the experiment and thought that the lighter-bodied and lighter-hopped beer would allow easier detection of troub off flavors. Mike had a cold, so they had to rely on Tracy for the taste results. Mike gave him a triangle test, and Tracy's very analytical mind and sensitive taste buds nailed the odd one out. Tracy indicated that the troub beer had qualities of being more yeasty and more raw. The non-troub beers tasted better to him as he felt they were all around smoother, but there definitely was a difference. He said there were no observable color or clarity differences between the two beers. So there's a vote for the non-troub beer with a light cream ale. Marcus Bird from Langholm, New Zealand, did a Dunkelweizen. Said after 24 hours, the fermenter with the troub was bubbling 1.5 to 2 times the rate of no troub, and croissant was approximately 1.5 times as high in troub as no troub. Head retention on troub was significantly better. Head volume about the same. Color and clarity seemed about the same, but hard to distinguish as it's a Dunkelweizen. No detected aroma differences. Initially, I thought the troub beer had a little bit of astringency, but I couldn't really distinguish it again after the first taste. Hard to do a blind taste as difference in head retention was obvious. Conclusions. He concludes that there are potentially some proteins or something in the troub that has a positive effect on head retention and yeast lag times. Eric Johnson from Cambridge, Massachusetts, did a steam beer. He said the troub-free portion appeared clear sooner, but both beers seemed mostly clear at the end of fermentation. So that's opposite of what I experienced. He said the tasting was performed blind, looking closely at the beers only after the tasting was complete. Both beers had equivalent and ample head formation and retention. The color is identical. The beers appeared identical in the bottle, but in the glass it's obvious that the troub-free portion is almost completely clear at 4 weeks, while the troub-containing portion has a slight haze. Again, opposite. Some of the haze remained after the beer warmed to near room temperature. The beer is mildly bready and malty, but there are no differences in the aroma between the two beers. He says the beers are nearly identical in flavor with this stringent tasting. As the beers warmed up, some subtle differences may be detectable. The troub-free beer has a very slightly bitter, crisper, and distinct-tasting malt flavor, while the troub-containing beer has a bit rounder malt profile. The hop flavor is slightly more pronounced in the troub-containing beer. The body is slightly fuller in the troub-containing beer. There's no difference in the bitterness of the two beers. The differences are subtle and would be difficult to distinguish without a persistent side-by-side comparison. He says carefully separating the wort or the tube from the wort prior to fermentation can help the beer clear more quickly, but it seems to have little more than subtle effects on the beer flavor. Which is, again, the clarity. It's interesting that you know, that's opposite of what I found. Johnny Misner from Goose Creek, South Carolina, did an IPA. He said the fermenter with the tube released CO2 through the airlock more rapidly through active fermentation. In other words, the with-tube fermenter was always bubbling faster, yet both started and stopped at roughly the same time. He says the no-tube beer seemed to have slightly better head retention, otherwise the two beers were identical. The with-tube beer had a brighter and more pronounced hop aroma. The with-tube beer had a fuller flavor and especially mouthfeel, while the no-tube beer had a weaker flavor and thinner mouthfeel. He said, I would rather drink the with-tube beer. It was more representative of the style, and it seemed to be better all around, other than head retention. The no-tube beer seemed empty in comparison. John Keske did... What did he do? He did a cream ale. He's from Kingston, Tasmania, Australia. His fermentation started 2 hours sooner with the tube, and it ended 2 days sooner with the tube. And he got slightly better attenuation with the tube. He says there was no difference in the head retention and volume, but there was a clear difference in the clarity. The clear sample was cloudy, whereas the tube sample was clear. And I should say that John did an excellent job with his report. He sent a PDF with photos and all that. Very nicely done.
That was good.
He says, the tasting results, I completed 2 separate triangle tests 1 week apart. Because of the obvious visual differences, I used white plastic cups that didn't allow me to identify the differences in the clarity of the beers. In both tests, I was able to correctly identify the odd beer and correctly identify which beer was the clear sample and which was the tube. The taste was very similar, and it's hard to pinpoint the exact flavor difference. The only way I can describe it is that the clear sample had a bit of an aftertaste. Astringent might be the best description, and the tube sample tasted cleaner. He says he needs to thank the researchers at the Menzies Research Institute, Tasmania, for helping me with the taste panel. I had 9 willing volunteers complete a triangle test. The participants ranged from other homebrewers to people who rarely drink beer, and none of them had any knowledge of the difference in the beers before the test. Of the 9 participants, 4 of them correctly identified the odd beer in the test. This is slightly higher than random, as you would expect 1/3 to get it correct just by guessing. But I think the only conclusion I can make from this is that there are no strong differences in the taste of the two beers. The panel showed that there was no significant difference in the taste of two beers, but based on these results, I will definitely never worry about getting Trub in my fermenter. The sample with the Trub had a stronger fermentation, was clearer, and to me, tasted better. So there you go, another vote for the Trub. Kevin Elskin from Little Boy Brewery up in Upper St. Clair, Pennsylvania, did 2 batches, an old ale and another cream ale. Let's see. He says, with some minor differences seen in the brewing process, the tasting results suggest that the inclusion of Trub in the fermenting wort does not negatively impact the flavor of the final beer, at least in the first few weeks after brewing. To the contrary, the beer fermented from the Trub containing wort was actually preferred in most cases and at worst was judged to have no negative impact. He did an old ale, and again, this is a really good effort. He did send a PDF with photos and results. He said the final gravity of the fermenter with no Trub on the old ale was 1.017. The fermenter with Trub was 1.018. But with the cream ale, the Trub-filled wort finished at 10.05. The clear wort finished at 10.07. This contradicted the first batch where the Trub-filled wort finished at a higher final gravity. So he had a flip-flop between those as far as the effectiveness of the fermentation. Now, the tasting conclusion, in 4 of 6 cases, tasters correctly picked the outlying beer and clearly preferred the beer fermented with the trub. In the remaining 2 cases, tasters correctly picked out the outlying beer but selected the beer that had been fermented with no trub. In the latter 2 cases, the preference was very small. While it goes against all generally prescribed homebrewing recommendations, including the trub and the fermenter, at worst, makes no difference and may actually improve the beer flavor. Now, he did a matrix. I'm telling you, these are thorough people. Now, if you look at the matrix, I mean, he says 4 out of 6 preferred the trub over the no trub. But if you look at it with the cream ale, I mean, they did, 3 people did 2 triangle tests apiece. With the cream ale, across the board, they always picked out the beer, the odd beer out. But on the cream ale, they always preferred the trub. But on the old ale, 2 out of 3 times, they preferred the no trub. So interesting. I wonder if the difference in the gravity had something to do with that. Rick Fisher from Neenah, Wisconsin, did a Scottish ale. He did 3 fermenters. He was going to 1 without trub, 2 with trub, and he was going to do a test transferring one of those other 2 into a secondary, but he ran out of time. Said the second and third fermenter were filled by pouring directly from the boil kettle. I tried to divide the trub evenly between the 2. Very vigorous primary fermentation on all 3 fermenters. The non-trub batch started to blow out through the airlock. Luckily, I caught it before I made too big of a mess. A few hours later, fermenter 2 and 3 started to push beer into the airlocks. So with him, the clear wort started first. Head retention and volume in batch 1 was poor. I'm hoping it will improve with some age. Head retention and volume in batch 2 and 3 with the trub were great. He couldn't detect any differences in color or clarity. No difference in the aroma. He says, since the no trub beer was undercarbonated, there was a big difference in the mouthfeel between the 2. The lack of carbonation made the beer taste a bit syrupy and sweeter. The other 2 with trub were great. The wife and friends greatly enjoyed them. Ryan Marks from Kansas City brewed a pale ale, and he just did he didn't do a double batch or a split batch. He just did a single batch and included trub in the fermenter. So again, it doesn't figure in exactly with the rest of the data. But he said the trub settled right away, aggressive fermentation through 6 days, then activity backed off almost completely. Primary was scheduled for 8 days. I've heard that the trub can accelerate the fermentation process. Clarity was great, color was good, there was no head on the pour, and maybe that was contributed by other factors, not sure. Had a much more malty aroma in the beginning, but as the beer aged, the smell went away and smelled more traditional. He said the tasting is fine, no erroneous flavors, a little lighter than I wanted it to be. He says, for me anyway, it's difficult to prevent trub from entering the fermenter. I also spoke with a local brew pub, whom I'm friends with, or the brewer at a local brew pub, and he doesn't worry too much about the trub. He tries to remove it, but most of it ends up in the primary anyway, and we've always enjoyed his brews. So he says he's basically saying that he doesn't think that, based on this single batch, he didn't do a side-by-side, but he's not going to worry too much about the trub. So that's a vote for the trub doesn't ruin the beer position. Dan Legler from Dahlonega, Georgia, did a Cascadian dark ale. Fermentation started within 24 hours for each. I transferred both to secondary after 11 days. The one with the trub was 1022. The one without was at 141, or 1041. So that's quite a difference after 11 days in the primary, transferring to secondary. He dry hopped both. He says after 8 days in the secondary, he bottled and the trub beer was at 1020 and the non-trub beer was 1022. So I guess it got finished in the secondary. Both beers appeared the same, had similar carbonation and head creation and retention properties. The trub beer had a much more pronounced hop aroma. The trub beer seemed to be more crisp and the hop flavor more pronounced also. I took the beer to a homebrew club meeting and everyone agreed that the trub beer had a brighter flavor. He says, the trub doesn't hurt, and it seems to help, especially at colder than normal fermentation temps. And one more. Joey Clayton from Orlando, Florida, did an American Amber. He says he saw no difference in timing, vigor, or health of fermentation. Everything seems identical except the additional tubes settled at the bottom of one. No difference in head retention, color, and clarity. The non-trub beer had more head volume, but seems to be a difference in the pour or keg carbonation. The trub beer had a slightest amount more aroma, but was poured second, maybe a minute or two after the non-trub beer. Same mouthfeel, same carbonation bite. He says he cannot see any difference that would make me. I cannot see any difference that would make me care one way or the other for an ale with US05. So there you go. It was pretty much split down the middle as far as sensory perception preferences, but it does seem that that the trub in the fermenter does have an effect over the vigor of fermentation.
Yeah, there was some of the results that we definitely got were clear. There were many instances of trub carryover into the fermenter, making the fermentation be more vigorous as compared to the trub minus batch. Not everyone. There were some that they were equal, but if there was a difference, it was always the trub plus was more vigorous.
Yeah, three.
I think that's right.
Three that said that the fermentation, either the fermentation vigor or the fermentation results, like the attenuation, was better mm-hmm. in the clear one. 10 said the trub was better.
Okay,
so it's 10 to 3. Yeah,
10 to 3.
Yeah.
Okay. And amongst people who did find a difference, there was quite a high percentage of people who could taste the difference between the two. I mean, the preferences were sort of split down the middle, but quite a few people at least said that they noticed a difference mm-hmm. in there. And I think this would argue, like, if you have the time to, if you have a favorite beer that you brew over and over, is brew a double batch or split a single size batch and try the experiment and just see how it affects, you know, your beer, because you might make some positive differences.
I think as far as my conclusion is that I don't think this is going to change the way that I brew, because I do a whirlpool and I like to let the trub settle out, you know, for 30, 45 minutes. But when I get down in the air, near the bottom of the kettle, when I'm siphoning out, I let some trub go. I don't get carried away and pour the whole bucket, you know, pour the whole thing in there, but I let some trub go into the fermenter. And I think I'm not going to be afraid of that anymore. I'm not going to feel guilty for letting that trub go over into the kettle.
My big take home from this is not that trub carryover is good or bad, but that it has an influence. And just, I mean, I might think if on a batch of beer I'm brewing, if I want, you know, based on the two beers I'm tasting right now, if I want a beer that has more of the characteristics of the trub minus beer, then I'll be more conscientious about making sure there's no trub carryover. But like if I was going to brew, say, a hoppier beer, I think I'd carry over not a ton of trub, but just a little bit
mm-hmm.
based on the results today that I tasted.
Awesome. Thanks, Chris.
Talk to you later.
Well, thanks again to Chris, and thanks to everybody who took the time and effort to participate. Awesome response. The results aren't clear-cut, but sometimes, you know, science is messy. I hope the data has given you some food for thought and some inspiration to experiment on your own beers to make your own conclusions about trub in the fermenters. If you have brewing questions, show suggestions, or just want to say howdy, write to james@basicbrewing.com or just fill out the contact form on basicbrewing.com, and please don't forget to tell us where you're from. Be sure to check out our DVDs, Extract Brewing and Partial Mashing, Stepping into All Grain, Low-Tech Lagering and Decoction Mashing, and Introduction to Wine Kits. You can find them all on our site along with our Brewer's Logbook. We got combo deals to save you a few bucks if you want to buy more than one DVD at a time, and you can check out our Basic Brewing shirts in the store, too. You can see a listing of the fine folks across the country who sell our DVDs on basicbrewing.com, and if there isn't a vendor in your area, you can order them online in our online shop at basicbrewingshop.com. Thanks to everybody who's continued to click on our Amazon.com link. We appreciate the support there. Our featured products this week that were purchased through the link are Artisan Bread in 5 minutes a Day, the discovery that revolutionizes home baking, and Advanced Elements Advanced Frame Convertible Inflatable Kayak. Thanks again, everybody. And remember, I can't tell who bought what, so no worries there. Just click on the Amazon.com logo on our site the next time you feel like Amazon shopping, and we greatly appreciate your support. Don't forget you can also join the American Homebrewers Association or subscribe to Brew Your Own magazine through the associate links on basicbrewing.com. That's all until next week. Until then, thanks for listening, everybody. I'm James Spencer. Production help for Basic Brewing Radio and our website is provided by Kelly Dotson. Basic Brewing Radio is a production of Active Voicing. We'll talk to you next time, everybody. So long.